950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Brand new book out from L. David Meach. It is Wolf Island, Discovering the Secrets of a Mythical Animal, with Greg Brining. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about Wolf Island. Dave, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. And I think this has become synonymous with natural research, had the ability to spend quite a bit of time out on Isle Royale, which has, for many people, has been considered a natural incubator of study between wolves and moose.
Absolutely. It's really the best little laboratory, outdoor laboratory for wolves and moose in the world.
When did you get first excited about and wanting to learn more about wolves?
Well, the island is huge, for one thing. It's 210 square miles, and it has only, as a predator, the wolf is the only major predator there, a large carnivore, and the moose is the only large herbivore on there. So it's a very simple system, and when I was given the opportunity to work there, and I've been interested in large carnivores as a kid, and I had an opportunity to do my PhD work there. While I jumped on it,
and this curtails a recapping a bit of the three summers and winters that you were there on Isle Royale. When were those years?
I started in 1958. And then I was also there for the next 3 years, so finished in 1962.
So, they weren't on the island, I don't believe, until, the 1940s, and then they went out there. When did it become pretty apparent that there was a unique research opportunity there on the island that the populations had held and that you had an interesting, predator-prey display right in front of you on Isle Royale?
Well, that was actually in the mid-50s when Dr. Durward Allen from Purdue University sized up the situation and thought this would be a great outdoor laboratory, and he applied for a National Science Foundation grant and received that funding in the late 1950s, and that's when he recruited me to do that, to start the thing.
Yeah, and Isle Royale, I think they had taken all the permanent residents off that island before that, or were there still some people that were living out there?
There were some people grandfathered in when it became a national park, some fishermen, commercial fishermen, and a couple of other families that had summer homes there, and they were grandfathered in so that during the summer they could be there. Nobody, no one, including the Park Service, was there in the winter at all. So basically, there was no one there from, say, Labor Day to early May or so before anyone would be coming for the summer.
There's an interesting element of this, because you go out there and you're saying you're going out there for the winters. Wolves are predators, and here you are. You're going to be basically by yourself on this island with a group of wolves is definitely a super predator. And
well,
I mean, that had to be intimidating.
Yeah, and the wolves that we found there in 1959, when first time I flew over that island, and we used aircraft to do the study, to follow them around with. But that first year, we found that the main pack concluded 15 wolves, which is quite a good size pack.
As a young research student, I don't know if you were aware of how big that pack was. Was there ever that concern? It's like, I'm going to go on an island here where I am no longer. I mean, on the mainland, sure, humans control, but here I'm back. This is going back into a time when you were to a point at the mercy of nature. I mean, did that ever cross your mind? Is that this might not be that safe at all?
Well, not really. There wasn't a lot of information about wolves at that time, but there was enough to know that probably they weren't too dangerous to people. You know, I had to do a little exploring on my own on that, in that regard, but I knew enough to know that I didn't think it was going to be that dangerous. So that was not a problem, really.
So you're there, and by the sounds of it, once again, one of the first things that we're doing here is establishing where are the wolves, how big are these wolves packs. Were you surprised? I mean, was it truly a thriving wolf population on the island, or was it just still bits and pieces as it was building itself up?
No, it was a thriving wolf population. There's no question about that. When we first found that first pack, and we could see, with 15 animals, they were doing well. 15 is a good size pack, they were, in fact, when we first found them, they were at a kill, and so we could see that, they were able to kill moose all right, and looked like it was a pretty good thriving community out there.
And it should also be mentioned at this point in the mainland U.S., the wolves had pretty much been wiped out, correct?
Well, they were, their numbers were down quite a bit at that time. There were still wolves in Minnesota and Ontario, but through most of the 48 states, they'd been pretty well wiped out by then. There were some in Wisconsin in the far north and some in northern Michigan. But basically, for the rest of the 48 states, they'd been wiped out. Yeah.
You followed around, and I have seen some of the videos of researchers that follow wolves. It seems quite it's amazing to be able to watch, because wolves are, and I still think today, a grossly misunderstood species that is wildly intelligent with an amazing family base within them. Was it for you as you were, I mean, obviously you had a plane, that this was, for, I imagine doing this kind of research in a plane was a little bit advanced at that time as well. How did it kind of present to you that you started realizing, whatever I learned in school, I'm going to learn a heck of a lot more watching these guys?
Right away, as soon as I saw them, I realized that, wow, this is going to be, we're going to be able to learn a lot here, because we were able to follow them around in the snow from the aircraft and count them and count the moose. And actually, one of the biggest or the most important things we were able to do is actually watch those wolves hunt. And not a lot of people had been able to do that before, but with this technique of following with the light aircraft, we were able to watch them interact over that whole period with 131 different moose. Mm-hmm. So I knew this was going to be, we're going to learn something.
How long, and the fact that you have the exact number of moose, I mean, how long did that take you to kind of track down the moose numbers?
Well, they're big animals, and we can count them from the air, and that's what we did, yeah.
But that's a big island. I mean, were you tagging? Were you putting radio collars on these on the moose?
This was way before radio collars.
Okay.
Radio collars were not invented and developed until 1963. So no, this was just this island. I mentioned is 210 square miles, mm-hmm. 45 miles long and 9 miles wide. So it's quite a you're right. It's quite a large island. But we were able to fly strips back and forth, especially since it was long and narrow, and keep track of where we'd been and what moose we counted and where we didn't count and that kind of thing. And so it all worked out pretty well.
There's one story you talk about here that you came across a wolf kill, and you actually landed the plane, even though the pilot, was it Don Murray? Was telling you no. This might not be a good idea for you to do, and you were able to get up there and get a close look at the kill. Correct?
Yes. That was very interesting. There were 15 wolves around that kill, and I was interested in seeing what they had killed and before they'd eaten it all, to see if I could tell whether it was debilitated or in good condition or what. And so I persuaded him to put me down on a nearby lake and let me snowshoe in and take a look at that.
How convinced were you that the wolves, weren't going to turn on you, especially some of the wolves that might have been lower in the pack that were not getting at the moose kill. Was there any worry at all on your mind
I wasn't totally naive. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen. The Park Service had given me a firearm to carry with me. They thought wolves were pretty dangerous and I ought to have one. So I had that thing, and I also told the pilot that if he saw the wolves coming back or coming after me to dive down through the trees, this is a small plane and a little Super Cub, basically, and dive down and scare them away and at least signal me that they were coming. It's hard to know what to do in that situation, but if I didn't try, I wouldn't learn anything. So I gave it a good try.
This, what you just described, though, something you just had mentioned, shows how important your research was, is that it sounds like even the government didn't really understand wolf behavior, that there seemed to be more of the belief in the narrative that had been created around the wolf as opposed to really what wolf behavior was. And so there is, even though that, and through the research that you did and you've learned so much and we understand these animals so much better, that the reality is that you were there to basically, attack the myth around the wolf and get the fact.
Yes, exactly. And fortunately, we had the opportunity there to do that. And so the study ended up being, pretty productive.
Mm-hmm. I will also make sure someone's either going to think this is the worst vacation of all time or the greatest vacation. I'm on the greatest side. You were able to take, it sounds like, if you had over the summers, at least you actually had some of your family come up with you.
Yes. Yes. My wife and later on, two children, lived on a nearby island. Right off the coast of the shore of Isle Royal. And, during the summer, of course, during the winter, they did not come out there. It was just the pilot and one of the Park Service rangers and myself. Mm-hmm. In the summer, it was a good place to have a little family.
Oh, I'll be blunt. I don't think you'll ever get a better vacation. The beautiful wilderness, all to yourself, really, for the most part. I mean, that must have been spectacular.
Well, it was beautiful. It was idyllic, actually, and it was. A little different life than we have now. During the first or second summer, we had to haul in ice from the shore for the refrigerator and stuff like that. Washing machine was one, an old Maytag one that with a pedal you had to step on to start the thing and that kind of thing. But it all worked out very well, and we loved it.
Do you remember while you were there? I mean, I met, and it almost sounds too perfect. Did you hear the wolves howling at night while you were there during the summer with your family?
Oh, yes, at many different times. And in fact, we'd often try to get them to howl. At that time, I had a portable record player, and this is back in the old days, but it was a crank up player with a vinyl. Recording of wolves howling and a loudspeaker, and could blast that out and try to get them to respond, and they often did. Now, nowadays we do that ourselves with just howling like a wolf, but we didn't even know at the time that you could do that, so we had this record player that broadcast recorded howls out there, and it was great to hear the wolves howl back.
I want to step away from your book for a quick second and ask you one thing as a wolf expert, you were there at the beginning when we started to understand these creatures better. We have brought the populations back. Now you have the current administration lifting the endangered species protections on the gray wolf here. Your thoughts on that? I get the mindset of we've spent the time and effort to bring these animals back, and now it seems like because of knee-jerk reactions from a handful of ranchers, and I don't want to dismiss the problems that ranchers might have with a predator, but at the same time, I don't know if this is necessarily it's safe enough to lift the endangered species protections on the wolves. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Oh, well, the wolf population in the 48 states has reached a minimum of 6,000 animals. So from a population standpoint, it's quite secure, and it has that population, including that in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. They have met the requirements for wolf recovery according to the Endangered Species Act. So the delisting is, I don't think it's unusual that the government is trying to actually they have delisted them now as of early January. The states will now get jurisdiction, and they give the wolves a certain amount of protection as well, but you're correct, there will be some that are taken, you know, for killing livestock and that kind of thing. But each of the states have certainly pledged that their main management objective is to make sure they have a healthy wolf population. So I'm not too concerned about that.
It just as an expert on this, how many wolves could we lose from that 6,000 population before you'd say, you know what, maybe we need to put them back on the endangered species list?
Oh, I would say if they get down, and it's sort of done almost on a state-by-state basis, but like, for example, in Minnesota, the plans that have been derived for determining this said there has to be at least 1,250 in Minnesota, but we're up around 2,700 now.
Okay.
And in Wisconsin and Michigan, all that was required is about 100 between the two states combined, and they're up around 1,600 or so, maybe 1,700. So we're pretty far above the limits that would cause them to become, or what biologists have decided, determined would cause them to maybe become more endangered. So we're pretty far above that.
David Meech is joining us, senior research scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, also author of The Wolf, the Ecology and Behavior of an Endangered Species, co-author of The Wolves of Denali, and, of course, his latest book, Wolf Island, Discovering the Secrets of a Mythical Animal. I will take the last bit of this interview to – I'm going to fanboy on you here. I'm going to fanboy on you. I have loved the International Wolf Center. I have been going there every year. We are members. It's up in Ely. If you haven't been, everyone, it is truly an amazing site to visit. I am hard-pressed to think of another community the size of Ely that has anything as special as this. You were the founder of the International Wolf Center. First of all, wonderful work. What prompted you to come up with the idea for it?
Well, as you've already mentioned, wolves have been a controversial animal for many, many years. And, you know, there's a lot of people who really, especially early on, really disliked wolves and thought we shouldn't have any at all. And then there's a lot of other people who can appreciate, you know, their beauty and charm and all that. And so the extreme viewpoints sort of fostered a lot of propaganda about wolves, much of which wasn't really true. And we wanted to get the facts out there. I mean, we were learning the facts, and I had this project going on in Minnesota at that time. That was in the late 60s, early 70s, and 80s, and it's still going. But anyway, on that project, we were turning up a lot of new information, and I was intent on making sure that the public was able to access good, accurate, science-based information about wolves. So it was logical to set up a special wolf center to promote that.
I will say I know you guys just did the remodel there. Well, did it a few years ago. It's truly a wonderful setup. You've done this. You do take both sides of it. And I think that, you know, can I say a mission accomplished to a point? Because with the International Wolf Center, with the education, as you pointed out, we've brought the species back to a point where delisting it is not necessarily a bad thing. And I think that isn't that really the sign of success, is that you have educated the public and you've also looked after the species as a whole?
Well, certainly I'd say that recovery has been a success. And we like to think that our efforts in educating the public about it contributed to that, surely.
Yeah. That is truly a wonderful place. If you've got young kids, I love how you do not treat them as dogs. You do your best up there. They do the best up there treating these animals as the wild animals they are. And it's interesting, just to tell you how good this place is, I have talked over the years to many of the kids that go up there and work. They come out of college themselves. And if you are researching wolves, it is pretty much the A-list number one place you want to go to work in the summer so you can get involved in it. I want to encourage everyone, if you can, go get a membership to the International Wolf Center. That really is a great site, sir.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate you saying that.
Well, Wolf Island, once again, discovering the secrets of a mythical animal. This is with David Meach and also with Greg Brining, the forward by Rolf O. Peterson, and it is available pretty much everywhere from University of Minnesota Press. By all means, Dave, come on back. Anytime you have a wolf book, we can definitely talk about this for as long as you like. I'd love to have you back on the air.
Well, thank you so much. I'd like to do that.
All righty. You're listening to The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.